Alan Doig, Reel 3. We're talking about how you spent your free time. You were telling me about racing in Whalers. Who were you racing? Were they organised formal events?
Oh, yes. In the fleet, obviously, a signal went round to there'd be a Whaler race, and everybody put out a Whaler over a measure course and or a cutter. And it was quite a fleet event.
It's a regatta, really.
A regatta, yes. Yes. A Roman regatta around a big harbour like Sasebo.
Was it just the British Navy who participated, or were there other navies involved?
I can't remember any other navy being involved. I think it was particularly British. Or maybe the Australians did. I don't remember.
Did you have anything to do with the civilian population whilst you were in Korea?
No.
How did you keep in contact with your family?
In those days, it was purely by writing letters, which was very infrequent. I think you used to get about one a week, something like that.
Were those letters censored? Your letters?
I believe going out. I think they were, actually. I don't remember an incident of that, but you posted your letter in the mail room, and I think they were censored, however cursory.
How often did you get your free time? How often were you allowed shore leave?
I think when the ship returned to Japan, we used to get shore leave every night, I think.
So how long would you be patrolling the coast of Korea, and how long would you have time off in Japan?
I remember on the Mount's Bay, we spent, it was something of a record at the time, we spent 90 days at sea on patrol. I think mainly it was about 30 days, something like that, and then back to Japan.
And how long would you spend in Japan?
Then I think we would spend about 2 weeks. I don't really remember.
And was that at Sasebo?
Sasebo, yes, it was. Well, we were also at Yokohama and Nagasaki. But I don't remember those.
You talked earlier about the mess arrangements on board your earlier ships, frigates. Did they differ in any way from the messing arrangements on the, or in the Belfast?
No, I think at that time it was similar throughout the Navy. You got allocated a table as a mess, and that's where you spent your free time. Yes, very similar. But I remember during the Korean War going on board an American, I think it was the Wisconsin, and that this being amazed at the system. They had a mess where you didn't prepare your food. It was like a do-it-yourself place. You went up and there was a choice of menus like curry, Chinese, roast beef, completely different to the Navy. That was amazing. You just took a try up and they whopped it on.
Do you remember why you were on the SS Wisconsin?
No,
USS
I don't.
Wisconsin.
I don't remember why.
Was it a sporting event or...?
It may have been the culmination of a sporting event. I remember spending a day on board, but why we were there, I don't know.
Did you see their sleeping arrangements?
No. But I think their stupid arrangements were they were in bunks, I think, cubicles.
Want to ask you a little bit about traditions on board the Belfast. I know you turned 18 when you were,
yes,
on board.
Yes.
Did that mean you got a rum ration?
That meant I got a rum ration, and as part of the celebrations, you had sippers or gulpers, and about 12 people in the mess, so they passed their tot of rum, and I got very drunk. And I spent, I think, 3 days in the hammock netting with somebody covered up for me on parade. Obviously, they said do it, and someone would say yes, or whether they knew I was drunk, I don't know. I was about 3 days in the hammock netting, and I hate rum ever since.
Was that your 18th birthday?
That was my 18th, yeah.
Did you take your rum ration after that?
I took it, I used to give it away.
Did you exchange it for something else, or did you just give it away?
No, you gave it to a best mate who was very grateful and downed it. I don't remember getting anything in return. But that naval rum had a particular smell about it, and if you got drunk on it, ever afterwards, and you smell it, you recall that occasion.
Can you tell me about make and mend?
Yeah. Make and mend was a period in the Navy to stitch any rips or darn your socks. And it was a period of recreation, really, where you didn't have to turn two in the afternoon. And I think we used to get make and mend once a week. And you spent the afternoon repairing your kit. That was quite fond memories.
Did you actually do that, or did you do other things?
Oh, yes, I did that, yeah. There was always something like darning your socks or mending your cap tally or whatever. You got quite proficient at it.
What about Sunday divisions?
Sunday divisions. On the Belfast, I used to get out of it because I said I was a member of Church of Turkey. That meant I didn't practice any particular belief. And instead of turning to and going to parade, we used to flake out and do nothing.
Did many people do that?
I think quite a lot did it, yes. A Church of Turkey had a lot of memories, a lot of members.
Did you participate in any special ceremony when you crossed the equator?
Yes. I don't recall it, only in vague terms, but we did cross the line ceremony.
What happened that you can remember to you?
No, I don't remember.
Any other memories of the Belfast?
No, very few memories of the Belfast. I know I came home on a Belfast, and I remember stopping in Malta and buying goodies to bring home, and also at Gibraltar, I think we stopped. But I don't remember entering Chatham. I must have done.
So you were in the Belfast from 1950 to 1950?
Yes, 50. I think I joined the Belfast from the Mount Spain about 51. I think the Korean War just started.
And what happened to you once you arrived back in Chatham?
I got posted into the barracks, and as I say, I got offered a posting to Bikini Atoll, and I swapped with another guy. I didn't go there, and he's now dead. And I was on fishery protection, which was up off Iceland and Russia, and there was something going on, which I now know we were listening to Russian signals, and the bridge was crowded with boffins who didn't mix with us, but they had loads of wireless gear up there. Officially, we were up there to look after our fishery vessels. And, like, the scandal of the Gaul that was supposed to be spying on the Russians, which they were, so I don't know.
What ship was that?
That was a True Love.
And what sort of a ship was she?
She was a frigate. Hmm.
You say you're on fishery protection duties?
Yes.
Officially?
Officially, yes.
What did that involve and what was your role on board?
I was a seaman once again. I remember on a True Love coming out of the onto the quarter deck in my singlet and being told, don't touch the guardrail, somebody won't be let go of it because it was so cold the metal would stick to your fingers, and yet there was no wind, and it didn't seem particularly cold. But we would do a patrol with the trawlers from Hull, I think about 6-7 weeks, then we moved back to Chatham for a couple of weeks and then away again.
This would have been
1953? 53, the Belfast came home, yeah. That was 53 to 55. And at the time, people were doing so well in Civvy Street that I was jealous because I think our wages were about five shillings a week. And people ashore were earning 30, 40 pounds a week. And so I wanted to get out of the Navy, and I put in a request to buy myself out. And eventually in 1955, the request was granted, and I think about 300 and something pounds to get out of the Navy, and which I willingly paid. In the meantime, after the True Love, I did a naval diving course in Chatham. A clearance diver.
What was that for mines?
Well, I didn't know. It was changing in those days. They trained us to jump from helicopters into the water, and the idea was that you would detect sonar pings of submarines. And I did all the training, and when they realised that I'd put in to get out of the Navy, I got dropped from the course.
So you were on the True Love for two years?
Yes, about 2 years.
How did that ship differ from the Belfast, if it, in any way?
It was back to small ships. I mean, it's very small, but I don't recall too much about the True Love. I think it was a fairly happy ship. All my ships were happy ships, really.
You touched briefly on the conditions, the weather conditions.
The weather conditions were quite tough. I mean, the Arctic Circle would be very cold. And I remember leaving Chatham, and you get coughs and sniffles, and after about a week at sea, they'd all clear up. Then it'd all be a healthy ship's company until you got back to Chatham, and you'd all get a flu. I remember that.
How did the ship's company cope with the weather conditions, the cold?
I think very well, really. We were all young men. Nobody used to complain about the cold.
What was your particular role on board? You were back to being a naval seaman?
Yes. I don't really remember. The guns weren't operating on a True Love, so I think we were just had normal seaman's duties.
Did started to tell me about coming out of the Navy. You bought yourself out.
I bought myself out, yes.
Where did the money come from? Had you saved the money? Or?
I've saved it and I've also borrowed some. Yes. Then I went to back home to my father.
Before you left the Navy, did they make any preparations for you returning to civilian life?
No.
Did you go on any courses, for example?
No.
Were you given a demob suit?
No. The general tone was I'd let the side down when I wanted to buy myself out. They didn't want me to go, but they reluctantly said okay at the end of the day.
So you returned to your father?
I returned to my father, and we had a lodger at the time who was working at CAV in Acton or Shepherd's Bush, and he was earning about £150 a week, and I wanted to be a capstan setter. And I went to job centre now, it was a Labour Exchange, and a chap said to me, if you get your hands dirty, they'll always be dirty. So my advice is for you to get a clean job, and they'll always be clean. And so I joined a firm called Blore Knox, American firm, which later became taken over by Babcock and Wilcox as a progress clerk. And then I became a buyer in that same group. And that went on for many years. And then I became regional manager with a territory of the whole of Africa and the Middle East, which was quite an experience. So I used to be 3 weeks away and 3 weeks at home. That went on until I became redundant in 1978. And I thought, well, I shan't work for anybody else again. And I started my own business, which was very successful.
So you adjusted to civilian life pretty well?
Yes, I did, but it took a long time. I used to wake up in the morning at 6 o'clock and I would dream I'd be on parade. It took a long time for that to wear off.
Have any other aspects of naval life continued into your life, like the discipline, the order,
Yes, good order and discipline remain with you. That it's something that you pick up. Well, I picked it up at Ganges, and I suppose you never forget it. And I know it annoys people when you see something out of place and you put it right and they say, oh, fusspot, and you can't help it.
And the other qualities that you acquired during your time in the Navy that have helped you in civilian life?
I think it does help you. You're more disciplined in yourself. You run a tight ship all the time. Yes, you don't forget that. That's helped me now. I'll get up in the morning and do a day's work, and my son will stay in bed till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not at all the way that we were trained. So it doesn't do you any harm in the long run.
You bought yourself out of the Navy.
Yes.
But later on you joined the Belfast Association.
Yes. I saw an advert in a local paper by Ted Hill, our secretary, saying, have you served in Belfast? And I contacted Ted, and I've been on a committee ever since.
What made you want to join the Belfast, having washed your hands of the Navy so long ago?
Well, it's because it's the last ship of its kind in the world, and I served on it. And I somehow like the association.